Okay. I can't give you any specifics. I cannot give you any specifics. But a lot of late breaking news on Friday. And frankly, I had this information on Thursday. But we had it confirmed, I believe, Friday. My manager was on the phone to me all weekend, just pounding away on the phone, and I refused to answer it because I was in the middle of getting drunk. I was there at the thing, at the what is it called? Yeah, it's a radio function in Chicago, and I was there with Turi and all of my chums. And all of, probably a lot of you very fine folks were out there too. Met Fitz and the guys from Seattle. Met, who else, man? Steve Dahl, I missed you, Steve. I'm so sorry, man. I really am. But we were only in and out, you know, in a fucking, like, not even a 48-hour period. I actually counted up the hours. It didn't even amount to 2 full days. but definitely going back to Chicago in about a month, I think. And, great city, had good time with everybody, and throughout the course of the weekend, phone calls were coming in from the hinterlands. We were getting connected to vast reaches of space, and I'm very excited. I'm very excited because, number one, it's a television project. Number two, you're looking at the executive producer. Well, I mean, these things need to be negotiated, but please, you know. It's a created by, you're looking at him. It's a, and I'm not going to go any further, but it's with a very reputable and very successful production company here in, their shows you've seen, lots of them, and you've seen them all over the goddamn place. So, and you like them. Too. Their shows are very, very popular. So I don't want to give any more specifics until there's an actual announcement. If there, you know, for whatever reason, if there isn't, and things, you know, happen sometimes, you know, a deal doesn't get done because somebody decides, oh, that's not really, you know, what I thought it would be, etc. But these are very, very nice people. And I can't even emphasize that enough because they get what I do and they are enthusiastic fans and, and they're successful, as I mentioned, producers of the visual thing that we call television.
Phil, I'm very... listen, my throat sounds really good this morning.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. I think it's a matter of keeping it going all week. I was talking all weekend, you know, and I think that's what has to be done. I mean, I was talking to everybody all weekend. Very interesting thing, by the way, not a huge piece of information, just kind of an interesting aside. I was sitting at the bar there at the Renaissance, as is my wont, and I forget what I was doing. All the shit that you do at like 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock in the morning, besides drinking. I don't drink that early, but I was sitting there going through my email, all that shit. There's about 9 people lined up at the bar at the Renaissance, all doing that shit, or sitting in the lounge. And then there's, and I had lunch there, and the bartender told me, she said, so I said to her good-naturedly, I said, I hope we haven't been running you ragged around here. She goes, last night was my best night ever for tips. She goes, God damn! Yeah, we've had a lot of people in this hotel. Never had radio people in here. She said I made a bundle of dough. I said, oh, that's very nice. She goes, well, it's the fact is, I shouldn't say this, but she said the fact is you guys don't stop drinking. You know, she goes, guys are running in and getting drinks and then running back to the seminars. You know, and maybe that's the problem with this industry. It's just a good old fashioned. Lots and lots of alcoholism or something, perhaps. I somehow doubt that. Although, when you look at the guys, the CEOs, these are all people who were not there. This was really a programming thing that Don Anthony puts together for morning shows. So all the morning shows in America were there. And all the morning shows in America that get sent there by their station, you know, let me put it to you that way. Although there are a few people at their own expense will travel to these things. And I met a couple of guys from Premiere. They're not radio guys, but they're production guys, and they do comedy, and they fly themselves to Don's boot camp every year wherever he has it. But I thought it was very funny. She said, "I never made as much money in my my time here at the Renaissance, because the tips were great, and it was like nonstop service." And there was an attorney sitting there. Apparently, according to the bartender, the attorney said to her, "You know, where do I get a job like that? Jesus, you know, I'm drinking through the." And she said, "Well, you're a lawyer. Don't you guys ordinarily do that?" She goes, "Not so as you'd notice." She didn't say that. I really don't know what she said, but the attorney did say, "You know, where do I get a job like that?" And coffee, man. Yeah, baby. A couple of things. So that's a very, very huge piece of news that I'm breaking here. And to, again, encapsulate, this weekend I got it confirmed that we are going to sit down and talk a deal with a big production house, television production house here in Los Angeles. They are the producers of a lot of shows and a lot of hit shows. It is a project that is mine, created by me, that we would produce, that they would, you know, obviously aid in the production of. And it's what, you know, we do here on the Phil Hendry Show. It's, you know, comedy, humor. So we're going to actually talk a deal with them. I just got in touch with my very, very good man who's an entertainment lawyer here in L.A. who's done a lot of work with me, and just got an email from him this morning that he's ready, willing, and able, you know, and he's a really experienced guy, so that's very cool. Let's see what else. And I'm really thrilled because these guys that we talked to, and I just had the meeting with them on Thursday. I got to tell you, I have walked into a meeting. At the end of the meeting, it says, "Let's do a deal." I usually, you know, you have one, two, three meetings or something, but it did happen to me once before I think when we did our pilot for NBC, it was that fast. But this was really gratifying because literally the principals of this company know me, know my work, love the shit out of it, and were, you know, and have followed, you know, followed the various incarnations and stages of the Phil Hendry Show. So, and I talked and met with the crew, really nice folks. What can I tell you? Just, you know, if you're sitting down with your people who get you and understand you and think you're funny, and then you're all of a sudden, it's like you're home, you know, it's like you're talking to friends, you know. One other aside was that they are familiar with live production, and they were very eager and anxious to assist in our live show, which was really unbelievable, and offered up, you know, various suggestions, including directors, people to help, you know, direct the show, because, I ran into Jimmy Pardo on the plane. I don't know if you guys were following any of the Facebook bullshit. It was hard to get, I couldn't get connected in the air for some reason, and when I did get connected, I was messing around going to Chicago, tweeting people and saying, "I can't believe we're actually flying, you know, this thing is in the air." I was doing stupid shit, and then I was tweeting pictures of, "Wow, look at this, we're up in the air, you know." And then what's cool with Twitter and Facebook is you actually get these place locations even when you're flying. So, like, we were flying over the Kansas-Colorado border and this kind of shit. So, in the middle of all that, all this tweeting, Jimmy Pardo came on the plane, and Jimmy was in, I think, Cedar Rapids doing some stand-up in the area and connecting through Chicago. So he and I talked, and Jimmy's just a terrific guy. I think he's funny as fuck. He makes me laugh, and he also had some really good advice on the one-man show and the stuff that we do here. So thank you, Jimmy, for that. I will take that to heart and, you know, do the Do and the Funky Chicken too. Number three. We're going to go to Canada on Wednesday, home on Sunday. So, Alex, if you're watching, we will put three shows in the can Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And I'm home on Sunday. So that's what the compromise is, if you will. Was I going to go the whole fucking week? I don't know. Is it the thing? I had no idea. This is all very late-minute stuff. So we're going to leave on... we're going to leave on Wednesday morning. I mean, the whole fucking day is going to get shot. You're flying from west to east. Your ass is, you know, flying, man, and especially you're losing hours. But unless I want to leave at, you know, like 6 a.m. or whatever the hell. But I don't want to do that shit anymore. We're going to get to Canada at around, 7 in the evening, 6 o'clock in the evening, whatever. Have a bunch of fucking drinks. And then I'll see my cousins on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then we're out of there on Sunday, and then that's it. So, Franny, I gotta email Fran and those guys, let them know what's up. I mean, that's just, you know, that's all I can do, man. That's all I can do. Let's see. Home for the holidays. I believe I've missed each and every one. Please celebrate me home. Give me a number, please. Anybody remember that song? Kenny Loggins? You do? You don't? You don't care? Okay. Neither do I. God damn it, I got a lot of... Couple of other things, huh? Look at there, there's my, the Gogo page is still open. You fucking people at Gogo. Gogo InFlight, you know, the Wi-Fi providers for InFlight. God damn, have you got it good. Hoo-hoo! How'd you get that deal, man? Nobody can do shit without going through Gogo. You motherfuckers are like, you own that shit. Home for the holidays. Here is Apocalypse World War One. This is the show that I've been watching. Very good show. Very, very good show. I thought for a moment there, like I was telling you guys, I thought for a moment there I was going to get a bunch of goddamn preachy fucking bullshit, you know, about how, well, it's really just a war about the arms makers. You know, it was a lot more than that. Don't be simple fucking minded and think that, and this is a show that I also like called World at War, narrated by Laurence Olivier. This is World War II. This is Dunkirk. This is they got the guys off the beach. And these men were 500,000 British and French soldiers were saved from disaster as they were evacuated off the beach at Dunkirk and away from the approaching German army. And that was the biggest, one of many fuck-ups by the so-called genius Adolf Hitler, letting the British get away because they returned in force and kicked his fucking ass. But at the beginning of the war, Hitler got advice that he had to get his supply lines caught up. And maybe Hitler had a little bit of... Hitler was very, very much an admirer of the British Army and the British Empire and considered the German people, the Aryan people, to be of a kindred blood. So he was very shocked and very hurt when the British said, you can pound that up your fucking ass sideways. And here are the Stukas. These are the German dive bombers. And that looks like, I don't know what the fuck, that's France. So the once Dunkirk was finished and the British soldiers got off the beach, the Germans then got their supply lines caught up and got their gasoline in order and all this shit. And a few of the German generals were pissed off saying, we can finish them off if you don't, keep pulling on your dick there, Mein Führer. And he said, to the concentration camp with you. And they went, oops. So here are some British prisoners with some grinning fucking Fritzy there saying, look what I got, some bits. and the French. One of the untold stories of World War II is that the French fought a very heroic... Here's a propaganda film made by the Germans talking to British prisoners. And it's supposed to show the British saying, yeah, we're being treated real good, and these Krauts are okay. And you see all these Germans standing behind this guy, like, to monitor what he's saying. Look at these guys.
I'm listening to what this Brit is saying, you know, this Tommy.
Right, and these chaps are all right, and they gave us tea and some cigarettes and cigars and all that, and sure, they kicked me in the balls and beat me up and all that, but, you know. So the British got away at Dunkirk. Meanwhile, one of the heroic untold stories of World War II is the French fought a very heroic battle to save those guys, to give them time to get off the fucking beach. And, you know, a lot of people would say, well, if the French had fought a heroic battle from the fucking gate, this shit might not have happened. And that is a consideration. There's no question. Had they gone into the initial battle of France with a game plan that was winnable, you know, we're talking, they could have kicked some serious ass here, Jack. But nonetheless, now this is, these guys laying down mines, or are they laying down depth charges? These are British on troop transport, looks like. A lot of these, there's a French and British guys. What is this, man? What the fuck is this? A lot of the, a lot of these pictures of these British soldiers at the very early stages of the war, you forget how fucking, people talk about how small the country is. Well, they had an empire. So they were bringing troops in from India, they were bringing troops in from Australia, they were bringing troops in from New Zealand, they were bringing troops in from Canada. It wasn't just this small, paltry force of British soldiers, but nonetheless, it wasn't even as big as, even from the whole fucking British Empire, it wasn't as big an army. Now here's a guy, look at this, it wasn't as big an army as the Americans had brought to Europe, for instance. Now here's a guy who talks like this, if you listen to him. This gentleman was a member of Parliament, and one of the more outspoken proponents of war. This guy here is a fucking, I don't know what he is, man. He's a journalist. And this guy here, who knows what he is. All right. Just turning the fan on a little bit here this morning. Hope you guys had a good weekend. There's our main man there, Chamberlain. And we have peace in our time. Now, this chap Chamberlain was the biggest load of shit you've ever seen in your life. Bull of crap. I don't know who this fucker is. I know who he is, but I can't place his name. He was a hawkish proponent of war, also gay, closeted for obvious reasons. It was the 40s. Excuse me. Some of our greatest soldiers in World War II were gay. In fact, one such man was a member of British intelligence that was instrumental in cracking the German code at Bletchley Park, was what it was called. Bletchley Park was a place where the German, where British intelligence worked on a variety of projects, but one of the projects they worked on was the cracking of the Enigma code, the Ultra. The Enigma code was the German code that was cracked by these chaps, that Bletchley Park, which was, you can't even begin to put a value on it. It won the war. It won the fucking war. The fact that these brain surgeons working at Bletchley Park, a conglomeration of chess masters and mathematicians, and one of the guys that was instrumental not only in cracking the code, but also in a lot of the double agent work that went on after that. Because what the British did is they cracked this fucking code. They knew every goddamn thing was happening, which is what saved England in the Battle of Britain, by the way. They knew when the German raiders were coming. That doesn't necessarily artificially create more aircraft for you to go and meet them, because the British were way down on numbers of fighter planes that they had to shoot these fucking bombers out of the sky. Way down. But because of the Enigma code being cracked, they were able to meet these bombers as they were coming across the English Channel. The Germans continually were saying, how the fuck do they know that we're coming? What is going on here? Every time we fly over there, the Germans read it as meaning the British had far more planes. Germans never in their wildest dreams thought that the British had cracked this fucking code. One of the guys instrumental in cracking that code was a very, very gay, and when I say very, very, this guy went back to designing dresses or something after the war. But, you know, you tell people that, and you tell a lot of these homophobes that shit, and they come up with 9 million different excuses as to why that doesn't mean anything. I don't know. But anyway, no biggie. As that guy in West Virginia said, nobody really cares about gay rights. You keep talking that way, man. We're going to get down to the news here. Vandalism and looting. I don't know if it's a riot per se, but there was the death of a young man. I don't know if this is in St. Louis. One of the things that I really hate about racial unrest, and maybe it's the thing that I hate the most, is the fact that when it happens, the same tired, stupid conversation begins to take place among a lot of white people. You know, well, I don't understand. What did they do? I don't understand. It's like, you either want to understand or you don't. I saw somebody posted something today. They said there's two kinds of listening. There's listening to learn, and there's listening waiting to reply. Listening, waiting to reply is, that's a stupid person there. That's an ignoramus. Listening to learn is the intelligent person's way of doing things. A candlelight vigil for a young, unarmed black man who was fatally shot by a suburban St. Louis police officer was followed by unrest as crowds looted and burned stores, vandalized vehicles, and taunted officers who tried to block access to parts of the city. Nearly three dozen people were arrested after tensions erupted following a candlelight vigil Sunday night for 18-year-old Michael Brown, who police said was unarmed when he was shot multiple times Sunday in a scuffle with an officer in Ferguson. The investigation into what led to the shooting was ongoing, but Ferguson Police Chief Tom Jackson told the Associated Press on Monday the FBI was taking over the case and that he welcomed the move. Streets upended on Sunday night were relatively quiet early Monday, with some debris littering the area, but crowds largely dispersed. St. Louis County Police spokesman Brian Shellman said 32 people were arrested for various infractions, including assault, burglary, and theft. Shellman said two officers suffered minor injuries and that there were no reports of civilians hurt. Several businesses were looted, including a check cashing store, a boutique, and a small grocery store. People took items from a sporting goods store and a cell phone retailer and carted rims away from a tire store. Some climbed atop police cars. The officers with riot shields and batons stood stoic nearby, trying to restrict access to the most seriously afflicted areas. Daniel Trout, a 14-year-old resident of Ferguson, said he was convinced the troublemakers were largely from outside Ferguson and that they had used Brown's death and the vigil as an opportunity to steal. Most came here for a peaceful protest, but it takes one bad apple to spoil the bunch. I can understand the anger and unrest, but I can't understand the violence and looting. Okay. I don't know how much of this shit we're going to deal with on the show, but we'll... God damn it. This is the most... This fucking print feature, man, is not making it, man. Mm-mm. Welcome, 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 welcome to our tune-in and our Listen Live listeners. It is the Phil Hendry Show, and we're about ready to get rocking and rolling here. I just was checking into a few things here. All right. What do you say we just do this shit, man? And let's say we did, and we're just pretending that we didn't.